Earners, what's up? Look, life's expensive, whether it's extra fees at the movies, hidden airline charges, or surprise concert ticket fees. It feels like every step forward comes with a setback. But what if your bank actually helped you move forward? That's where Chime comes in. With a Chime checking account, you get tools designed to make financial progress easier, like no maintenance fees, fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, and even early direct deposit up to 2 days early. Imagine how much smoother things could be with extra breathing room like that. Now, let me tell you about SpotMe. We've all been there, checking your balance, realizing you're short, and then getting hit with an overdraft fee. I've had it happen, and it is frustrating. But with Chime, overdrawing your account doesn't come with a penalty. You can overdraft up to $200, and Chime will spot you. No fees, no stress. Your next deposit automatically covers the negative balance. Chime's not just a bank, it's a community. You can give or receive boosts from friends to temporarily increase your SpotMe limit when you're in a pinch. And with over 50,000 fee-free ATMs, accessing your money won't cost extra either. Here's the best part. Chime has already spotted its members over $30 billion in financial support, helping millions of people make progress. So why not join them? Make progress towards a better financial future with Chime. Open your account in just 2 minutes at chime.com/earn. That's chime.com/earn. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Timing depends on the submission of the payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Chime. Feels like progress. Earners, what's up? Look, you know how every new year we set these big goals, like saving more money, but somehow life just gets in the way? I mean, how many times have I told myself I'll stick to a budget only to see random delivery fees and subscription services eating away at my wallet? It's like the world is designed to spend our money. That's why I love Acorns. It makes saving and investing automatic so you can stick to your financial goals without even thinking about it. This episode of Earn Your Leisure is sponsored by Acorns. You've probably heard me talk about Acorns before, and I'm excited to share more about how it can help you too. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. Here's the best part. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you invest with the same spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. You don't need a ton of time. You can create your own Acorns account and start investing in just 5 minutes. Basically, Acorns does the hard part so you can give your money a chance to grow. For me, Acorns has been a game changer. I remember looking at my bank statements and realizing I wasn't making any progress toward my long-term financial goals. With Acorns, it was like flipping a switch. Now, every little bit of spare change I spend is automatically invested. Over time, those small steps have really added up. And it feels good knowing I'm working toward a better future without stressing about it every day. So head to acorns.com/EYL or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensations provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/UIL.
Yeah. We live. What's going on, y'all?
Sir, what's the deal?
Happy Thursday. How you feeling?
Good.
There was a lot of prayers out there for you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I stopped by the little high school. They was like, yo, you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. They're like, Shotty, you okay? I'm like, he's fighting. Ab okay? He getting there. We all right, y'all. We getting there. Shout out to everybody that sent their prayers, man. Everything looking better on the up and up.
Yeah, for sure. So we back. Another great live ahead. We're going to be going over how to improve your credit. Pretty straightforward. As fast as possible. And that's something that obviously is vitally important in life. You know, a lot of people might have made a bad decision here and there, just got caught up, they didn't realize that they paid a bill too late and, you know, want to buy a home now or want to get a car or do a variety of different things, and your credit score is stopping you or slowing down the process. So improving your credit score is something that's very, very, very beneficial and helpful. So we're going to bring our guest on in a minute. Shonda Martin, somebody that's, she's been at InvestFest. She's done episodes. She's done events with us when we was in Oakland with Chase. So expert in the field, and somebody that's just been like a really good communicator as far as helping people and teaching people, like, you know, no gimmicks, no, you know, strings attached, just like real information that's important, especially in this space. A lot of times there's, you know, a lot of strings attached when it comes to the credit situation, but this is straightforward. So we're going to be getting into it. But before we do remember, if you haven't, get your copy. You Deserve to Be Rich.
Yeah.
It was vitally important. You know, that's the blueprint for financial freedom. We put together New York Times bestseller.
That's a fact.
In less than a week. It's been out for around 2.5 weeks now. So shout out to everybody that did get a copy.
Audible, yes.
Downloadable version, hard copy.
Large print.
Everything that you could think of, man. Yeah. But yeah, don't forget, man, that's something that, you know, timeless piece of work.
Yeah.
That you could pass, you can give to other people, you can gift it. Vitally important. So get your copy of You Deserve to Be Rich, yeah. New York Times bestseller.
And that, when you purchase it, man, we love it. Shout out to everybody that's been showing love, posting the book, tagging us in it. I'm trying to post as many as possible. We appreciate the love, but we got to keep this thing going. So when people ask us, where do I start? My new answer going forward is You Deserve to Be Rich. Everything you need is inside that book to get your game on track. And so we hope that you get it, enjoy it, but most importantly, implement and execute on the information inside. Got to do it. Got to do it.
Yes, sir. All right. So now we're going to bring our guest up.
Let's do it. Hey. Shonda, what's going on? How you feeling?
I'm good. I'm excited. Man, listen, I love talking about credit. I love teaching people how to, you know, improve their credit score. So I'm in seventh heaven right now. Like, I'm ready.
Yeah, our audience loves every time you are on the platform. You notice a pattern here. These numbers go crazy because every credit is something that we don't know a lot of information about, but we definitely need it. And if we have it, we definitely need to improve it or find ways to improve it and update ourselves on it, because the information changes. Information changes from year to year.
That's true.
So I'm happy we have you.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm excited. And shout out to y'all audience, because I feel like they just get me. They always show me love. And yeah. And they're action takers. Like, that's probably my favorite part about them. It's nothing better than like providing information or resources and being able to witness the person actually implementing those changes. Nothing better. So I'm all for it.
That's a fact. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're going to get into it. I know we got a lot to talk about. So I'll let you kick it off.
Okay. So first I want to say that I was tasked with probably the hardest, most simplest task ever. And that was accumulate a list or a set of tips to help people boost their credit scores. Now, as an expert in the field, with all of my experience, it should be like super easy. Like, that question is like it should be super easy. But for me, questions like that always pose like the hardest. Like, it's always the hardest for me, because I always want to make sure that I am giving actionable advice that is not only practical, but it isn't like they can start implementing it immediately. And that's usually like that's the lane that I like to take. And I wanted to also approach this with like not necessarily like surface level information that like people can just go on Google or have been hearing routinely. Like, I wanted to really take a look back at all of my most consistent strategies that just work and are tried and true, and that I'm willing to bet the farm on. And I've been able to compile a pretty extensive list of a very strategic but actionable and specific key points that I want to focus on today. So again, I'm excited, but like I said, it was hard.
And that's why we appreciate you, because your attention to detail, but more importantly, you care about people and you care about their results. And so again, we're happy to have you, man. So where do we start? Where do you want to start?
Where do we start? Okay. Whew, that's a loaded question. Now, when it comes to credit scores, a lot of time people are often only focused on like the numerical value of their score, like their credit score. I want to get a 700 credit score. I want to get an 800 credit score is usually like the request that I receive daily. But I'm a big believer of focusing on your credit profile, strengthening that. It does more for not only your credit score, but your borrowing power overall and your entire credit standing. So every time that I approach advising someone on how to repair or improve their credit score, it is never solely based on points. So I just wanted to say that first. And also, in order for anything that I'm going to say to make sense, you have to, the audience has to be willing to unlearn certain things that we've been accustomed to when it comes to like the credit game that are just flat out wrong. Right. And so, yes, I wanted to first give that disclaimer before we kind of get into these tips. And if you guys are ready, I can start with the most effective one or the one that will cause the most immediate boost.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's get it going. Let's do it.
All right. So my number one non-conventional tip that I would recommend for a person seeking to boost their credit rating is to, number one, target the late payments. The reason why you want to target the late payments anytime you are trying to improve your credit score is because of the impact that the payment history has on our credit scores. Because it's the largest factor, it's responsible for 35% of our credit score. Also, it holds over 192.5 points. So we want to get as many of those points as possible in order to reach a high credit score. So with that being said, the first thing that everyone needs to evaluate on their credit report when they're seeking immediate change in their credit score is trying to reverse the impact of the late payments that they have on their credit report. This happens only one way. So the way that they would do that is, because late payments are the number one reason people will lose 50 to 100 points per instance sometimes, and like I said, because it's the largest factor, the only way to undo that impact or neutralize the effects is to flood their reports with on-time payments. How to do that? It's easy if you think of it from this lens. I call it the 11-to-1 rule, right? So what that means is for every single late payment that is reporting on their credit report within the last 3 years, they're going to need 11 on-time payments to neutralize that negative impact on their score. How do they get that? You can do it by multiple ways. Number one, you can allow time to pass. You know, that's about a year. 11 months is about a year before most late payments will neutralize. But being super, super strategic and intentional about making sure that they are trying to cancel out the late payments within the last 3 years by specifically making sure that they have accounts that are currently reporting every single month to every single credit bureaus in on-time payment. And it has to be within that same category. So what that means is like if they have two late payments on a credit card within the last 2 years, then their goal is for the next 11 months is to get 22 on-time payments reported within a credit card account, right? It doesn't have to be the same account. It just has to be the same type. Does that make sense?
I'm with you.
Okay. Then the next thing that they would do to target late payments on their credit report is to request a goodwill adjustment from their lender, right? Now, there are going to be some payments that they will struggle with getting removed or some payments that they probably will not be able to amass enough on-time payments in a timely fashion, depending on how many that they have. So my rule of thumb is for any accounts that is still open, so it's still reporting, you still have a standing relationship with the creditor, you should always request a goodwill adjustment from them. And that's simply just going to the creditor saying, hey, I made a mistake. You know, I was late. I'm not denying it. Things came up. Things happened. I learned. Are you willing to erase that late payment record from my credit report? And that's called a goodwill adjustment. Now, a lot of lenders will grant this. Capital One is one company, Credit One is one company that is notorious for accepting and honoring goodwill requests, right? So yes, if you have Capital One, you have Credit One, or any bank that you have, make sure you are mailing a goodwill request letter to the creditor to ask for a goodwill adjustment for every single late payment within the last 3 years, right? So that's sort of like the first tip all in one. It was two tips all in one, which is to target the late payments within the last 3 years and trying to erase as many of those as possible.
So the goodwill adjustment, this is a one-time letter that can knock out a few payments, right? So this is not like I was late once, can you forgive me once? I might have been late four times in 2024. I'm sending this letter on behalf of 2024 for this adjustment. Can you forgive all four? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, you are correct. So you can ask, you can technically ask for any amount, right? Now, keep in mind, granting a goodwill letter is up to the company. It's at their, you know, they can decide to obviously deny it. And it is based on like the history that you are building with them. So they can say no. However, I want to, if you guys don't mind, I want to show an example of a template that they can use to send. All they have to do is plug and play their information and send it to their creditor. And so let me share that really quick. And it's just a good letter to have just in your file, just in case, you know. So are you guys able to see that clearly?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, good. So yes, so this is an example of a perfect formatted goodwill template, right? All they would do is obviously the red writing, they would replace it with their information and then send it via mail. Either send it via mail with only one exception, if they have access to the CEO's email address, which is a hugely slept on method of goodwill adjustments that burns me that people don't utilize that method. However, so just send a goodwill letter, send it in the mail, or if you have access to the executive or CEO's email address, then just send it directly to the email. And yeah, so you would do that for each late payment. If you have seven late payments, you can literally fill out seven of these, or if they're on the same account, of course, then you could just list them all out. You want to specifically focus on the late payments within the last 3 years, because those are the ones that's like weighing the heaviest on your score, affecting your borrowing power the most, and really are like probably the reason why you're like a person's score is just stagnant or, you know, being affected the most. So targeting late payments within the last 3 years is rule number one. That's going to, any late payment, any single instance of a late payment that is removed, that is forgiven, they stand to see an increase of 30 to 60 points per late payment. Like, it's that big of a deal. And as I stated, like, you would be so surprised to see how often the goodwill requests are granted, and also how effective the making sure that you are flooding your credit report with on-time payments to neutralize previous late payments, how effective that method is in the night and day difference that it makes on, you know, within a person's credit profile. So that's like rule number one, target late payments within the last 3 years.
All right. So I got a follow-up, right? Yeah. So I got the goodwill adjustment letter, right? But sometimes I might have paid it and it registered as a late payment. How do I dispute? How do I try to get that error off of the report, right? Because sometimes it's not my error. It might be on the lender's error.
So was it by way of a mistake? So you were not late, but somehow they reported you late, or?
They reported me late, but it really wasn't.
Oh, well, if it was their fault, then that should, you definitely need to take that up with the company first, like request that they send you a copy of your records, your payment record. Or if you have proof that you paid it. So like if you pay with your bank account or credit card and you have a record of you paying off your credit card in a timely fashion, then you can just go ahead and send the proof to the credit bureaus, letting them know that, you know, the company is wrong. But if you don't have proof of it, you are at the mercy of them providing you their records, and, you know, you are going against them. So they can definitely be like, well, no, we don't have a record of it. You know, so it's always best to obviously keep our own documentation because yeah, they're never on our side when we're up against them.
Document the process. Got you.
Keep everything. Keep everything.
Okay. All right. So that would be the first step.
First step, yes. And then the next thing that I would advise that would, like I said, make the most immediate or biggest impact on one's credit score, it would be, so I want to first frame this one. The next tip is relating to credit utilization as well. However, it's in a different capacity. So what I mean by that is, like, my second tip is to lower your credit utilization before their next statement date, right? And what that does, or just in general, learning how to properly pay your credit card, learning how to pay your credit card in a way that it maximizes your credit score and increases your borrowing worthiness will always be something that, like I always say, everyone that has a credit card needs to know how to properly pay a credit card and needs to know that there is a strategic way of paying it that aids to increasing your credit score. And the stereotypical or the standard way that we are paying our credit cards actually leaves about 80 points on a table that most people can literally access within 30 to 60 days by just reframing how they are paying their credit cards. And obviously, I'll get into exactly how, but let me put an example on the screen. Give me one moment just to make it make a little more sense. But okay, now when it comes to paying off your credit card, the first thing that I need everyone to evaluate for every single credit card that they have is to identify these two important dates. The first day I want them to identify is their due date. It's not up yet. And then the second date I want them to identify is their statement date. And understanding the difference, the biggest difference between these two dates makes the biggest difference in your credit score, because your statement date is the date that will determine how many credit points you are getting as a result of your credit utilization. And then your due date only matters to your bank. It does not affect your credit score. It does not affect how your credit cards are reporting. So that is not the date that is important. The date that is important is your statement date, right? And it's so important to the fact that, like, if you are not ensuring that your balance is below 10% of your credit limit at least 2 to 3 days prior to your statement date, then you are leaving a wealth of points on the floor. You are leaving a wealth of points just sitting there, and you are not being credited for really having that credit card, right? So I can either go through how I typically pay my credit cards, or if you guys have like a specific question in regards to like the differences of it, I can... You know.
Yeah, I think if you go through how you do it, that would be helpful for sure.
Okay, cool. Now, what I do is there's two golden rules that I have for my credit cards. Is I have a rule that by my due date, I make sure that my balance is zeroed. So I zero out my credit card by my due date. And that's simply because I want to avoid paying interest, right? So that's a personal quorum for me. I don't like paying unnecessary fees, right? However, that doesn't help my credit. When it specifically comes to my credit report, I also make sure that 3 days prior to my statement date in every billing cycle, so every month, that I have reduced my balance down to 10 or reduced my balance down to under 10%. And that way I can ensure that the balance that's being reported to the credit bureaus is favorable. And also it is showing that I am a responsible borrower. I not only use my credit card, but I can be trusted to pay it back, right? That's super important. Most people are usually under the guise that as long as they pay their credit cards by their due date, then they're good, right? And also, the other thing that I see is a person would zero out their credit cards on their due date, and then not necessarily have any inclination that how important their statement date is. So they don't even care what their balance is on their statement date, because they're unaware that that payment that they made on their due date is not being credited for their, and used as their utilization. Like, I think, so that's pretty much like the golden rule with credit cards. You just have to make sure that your statement date is being prioritized. Like, you have to make sure you are prioritizing the balance that your credit card is reporting on your statement date. And I always say, if you don't know or understand this, look at your most recent credit card statement, right? On your credit card statement, you will have what's called a statement balance. That's required for every credit card statement. Your statement balance, that is your utilization that was reported to the credit bureaus from that bank the month prior, right? So anytime you ever wonder what your utilization is, all you have to do is look at your most recent credit card statement, because your statement balance is your utilization. That statement balance is important because that's the key to unlocking as many points as possible within the credit utilization category, right? Which lends to 165 points. So we need all of those points, as many of them as possible. And the only way that you will have access to majority of those points is if you are strategically paying your credit card based on your statement date and obviously keeping a low utilization. Low is not 30%. Low is not anything other than what's considered good and low to lenders is literally between 1 and 9%. That is like the pristine range, the most optimal range. That is the range that if you are wanting or seeking to improve your credit score, if you are reporting anything above 9% repeatedly on your credit, as your credit utilization, then you are not going to increase your credit score. Like, it's just, you don't want to increase your credit score because it just won't happen. Now you may get a few points here and there. However, if you want to see a real change in your credit score, making sure that you are reporting between 1 and 9% by your statement date for every credit card, that's what's going to unlock like that next level of credit for any literally any profile.
This is pretty tricky, right? Because again, I like what you said there, between 1 to 9%. Mm-hmm. But you didn't say 0%, right? So most people that will just say, I'm going to use my credit card, I'm going to pay it off, right? I'm going to use my credit card, I'm going to pay the whole thing off. Probably not the best method if you're trying to increase your credit score, because it doesn't really show there's a payment history, right? They actually want you to have some leftover, right? Between that 1 to 9% so that you can continuously pay them every month, right? Paying off the balance every month is not the best solution. It's like confusing. What's your thoughts around that?
Oh, no, you were spot on. You were certainly spot on, because yeah, that is a common misconception that people have when it comes to credit cards, is like, reporting a $0 balance is good, or a lender would like prefer that, and nothing can be further from the truth. In fact, I'll show you a visual to make it easier for someone to like understand how lenders view credit utilization ratios. Like, they're super important, and like I said, this is probably the number one thing that affects borrowing power in terms of like credit card limits, the interest rates that one would receive when they're applying for anything. So if you're a person that finds yourself only being approved for up to a certain amount, or never being able to cross a certain threshold or tier when it comes to borrowing, it's usually probably because of your utilization. And I'm pulling up that chart right now.
And while you're doing that, like, for the statement date, can a statement date just be the same day as your payment date?
As the due date? No. So they're different. Your statement date is the...
Can you make it the same day?
Oh, actually, some banks will allow you. So it's up to the bank, and some banks will refuse it. But like, honestly, a lot of banks will allow you because they want your dates to be... to make sense for you. They want whatever's best for you to pay them back. They are usually willing to like accommodate that request. So I'll ask. And also, that brings me to another point. If your credit card statement date or your due date is during a time of the month where like you don't typically have extra finances. If it's right after you have to pay like a large bill like rent or something like that, you are able to request for your dates to change, your payment dates to change on your credit cards. Do what is best for you. Do what will help you to actually pay the bill. You know, like, so yeah, that I'm glad you brought that point up.
Yeah. If you ever had an American Express, you definitely are familiar with that. Like that, and that takes a while to even figure out like what the statement dates are. Is between the 25th to the 24th. And then the due date, obviously, you know, you can change it if it's mid-month. Like you said, a lot of people get paid bi-weekly. Some people get paid monthly. Having mm-hmm. the 15th as that offsetting day gives you some time, or the 16th gives you some time to get that money into the account. But yeah, they're two different things, man. I'm glad you brought that up. Very important.
They're two different things. They are. And I'm showing a screenshot. Let me know when you guys can see it. Are you able to see that?
Yep, we got it.
Okay, perfect. So this is just a quick key, a quick reference point that everyone needs to remember when it comes to paying your credit card and understanding utilization tiers and how they impact our credit scores. Now, your credit utilization will affect both your credit score as well as your borrowing power. Like I said, it affects pretty much everything with credit. So it's super important that you understand it. Reporting the wrong utilization can cost 40 plus points. And when I say wrong utilization, I want to stress how the wrong utilization is quite literally what we are taught. So it's the normal advice. So majority of consumers are following the wrong utilization advice. And that's the industry standard of making sure that you report 30% of your credit or 30% of your credit utilization, or making sure that you stay under 30% and you are fine. No, if you look on this list, you would notice that 30% is red. 30% is considered risky, right? The next tip will go a little more into detail about utilization specifically, but I cannot stress how important it is. If, like I keep on saying, if you are a person that is seeking to improve your credit, then do not go past 9%. Don't go past this second level if you want to actually see a difference in your credit profile. That's just stop right there. Because anything above that, then you are losing points. You are losing points. You're not maximizing the points that you are receiving for your credit utilization. You're just leaving points on the table, right? So this is just kind of like my standard advice when it comes to the tiers, right?
Yeah, Sean, a quick question, because, and there might be some people who are not even familiar with, don't know their credit score. Number one, not knowing that they can access it for mm-hmm. free. But number two, yeah. What is the range now, right? Because I remember 800 was the max score. Is 850 now the max score? Like, that's being the highest. This is really a trust system, right? How much the banks trust you will determine how high your score is. What's the range that it falls into now?
Oh, yeah. So credit scores range between 300, which is the lowest, and 850. The reason why it's 850 is because, like, the most widely accepted version of our FICO scores goes off that 850. So we kind of just, you know, accept it as like the standard. So between 300 and 850. Can't go below 300. Can't surpass 850. So we're giving 300 points. So it doesn't matter how bad your credit report is or your credit, how many collections you have. You cannot go under 300 credit points, right? So the goal, the entire point and goal of maintaining or obtaining good credit is seeking to get as close to 850 as possible, which math wise, that's just that the difference between 300 and 850 is just 550 points, right? So if you think of credit, if we think of our credit scores in net capacity, where you realize that there are 550 points that you could potentially get, right? And those 550 points are broken down into five separate categories, which is payment history. Payment history takes up 192.5 of those 550 points. Credit utilization takes up 165. Credit age takes up 82.5. And then credit mix and hard inquiries both take up 55 each. So if you add each of those categories together, it'll equal 550 points, right? And in order to get a perfect credit score, you would have to have a perfect credit report and not have any derogatories or be missing any of those points. There's no reason to aim for an 850 credit score anyway, but that is the highest possibility. Now, I always, when it comes to boosting credit scores and increasing your credit scores, I mainly focus on the top two categories, which is payment history and credit utilization, because just mathematically, if you are doing even moderately good, and when I say moderately, I'm talking, let's just say, for example, 60 or 70 to 75%. Doing good in those areas and getting about, you know, 75% of those available points, then the lowest that your credit score can even reach is a 680, right? And in case someone is not familiar with how credit score ranges are graded, a 680 is the lowest possible score to be considered to have good credit, right? So that's like the floor of what's considered a good credit profile or a good credit score. And I want to stress that point because I always tell people that if you do not have at least a 680 credit score, then there is something very wrong within your payment history or your credit utilization that needs to be addressed immediately. Because as long as you fix that or pay attention and be intentional about fixing whatever it is within your payment history or your credit utilization, which off the back, I'm just going from my experience, is usually high utilization above 30%, or late payments within the last 24 months. Those are the top two reasons why somebody usually does not have a 680 credit score. If you, those two things are not, does not apply to someone and they have below a 680 credit score, then it's usually like maybe they had like a bankruptcy or something like drastic. But if you don't have at least a 680, then there are very actionable and practical, easy changes and switches that you just need to make, like what we're going over today, and you can get a 680 within, I don't want to promise a certain time limit because it depends on the profile, but very quickly.
Yeah. Now, late payments, student loans count inside of those late payments?
Yes. Every account on your credit report, actually, every late payment on your credit report counts towards your payment bank or, you know, your late payments. So yeah, no matter how old, by the way.
Pandemic, we had that pause. Make sure you're paying your student loans. So we got target late payments, number one. We got lower utilization, number two. What we got at number three?
Number three. So this definitely is going to require a visual because I want to make sure that people are following it because it's a little more nuanced than the last one. Hold on, give me one. I'm gonna focus on one other one before I hit that one.
Gotcha.
For easier explanation. All right. Now, the next tip or credit strategy that I would recommend to a person who is trying to increase their credit score within the next year. This is one of my low-key favorite ones because it's one of the ones that is usually never, ever, ever thought of or mentioned or even taught. This is specifically for people who have charged off accounts, right? Now, At the mention of charge-offs, there are so many people that probably had a visceral reaction like, I'm not getting a charge-off removed. Just the reputation of a charge-off is usually attributed to that being the hardest account type to get removed from your credit report, right? That's one of the worst credit instances or the worst types of derogatory accounts that is on our credit reports, and it causes a lot of damage, right? And so most people, they either try to dispute that account, but most people don't have luck with getting them deleted. But that's simply because they usually are disputing it incorrectly, right? Now, I didn't want to get much into credit repair or credit dispute tactics. However, this one is worth mentioning. If you have a charge-off on your credit report, what I need you to do is, number one, you need to download your official credit report. You would do so by going to annualcreditreport.com. It is free. You get a free copy of all three of your credit reports. You need your official credit report and not like a credit monitoring app, specifically because our official credit reports contain so much more information and details about each account, right? And that information is what you will use and what you will need to determine if that charge off is considered valid. Right. Now, the second thing that I want them to do is once they get their credit reports, look at their charged off account and look at how it's reporting on their credit report. And they need to look for two things. The first thing that they need to look for is if that charged off account still is carrying a balance, right? Is it reporting a balance? Does it say $0 or does it still, if it was a repossession that was charged off, for example, does it say you still owe $12,000 or whatever on that account, right? So determine the balance on that charged off account, okay? If that charged off account has a balance that has been updated after the account was charged off, then you need to challenge that. Most people don't challenge charge-offs correctly. They usually challenge it the standard way that we challenge our credit report, which is usually like based off either random letter templates that they found online or mainly focus on the FCRA laws, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And those are just a host of consumer laws that we usually, you know, use to challenge credit reports. With charge-offs specifically, there is a set of statutes that every consumer needs to be aware of. Right. And without overcomplicating it or being too technical with it, I definitely know that it's important that they get this. So I want to make sure, hold on, that I am showing it just for them to screenshot, if anything. Can you see it? Yeah. All right. Now, this is the four-step process on how to properly challenge a charge-off. And the reason why I'm placing so much emphasis on challenging charge-offs is because something that most people don't know is most charge-offs that are reporting on our credit report, they are valid charge-offs, meaning they are that person's account. The account was charged off. I'm sure they did owe the lender, right? That's not what we are disputing. However, a part that is often misunderstood or left out is while most charge-offs are valid, most are not accurate. And there is a big difference between a charge-off being deemed valid and accurate. It's the difference of a person getting pulled over with an expired license. They have a license. It's their information. It's their address. However, the status of that license makes it illegal, right? Like it doesn't matter that the information is correct. That's sort of the same thing that happens with charge off specifically. Getting a charge off removed from your credit report legally, I want to place emphasis on that, legally, and doing it the proper way can cause 100+ point increase in a person's credit score, and it does wonders for your borrowing power, especially if you are trying to buy a home, specifically trying to buy a home, trying to buy a car, or pursuing any sort of installment-based loan. Charge-offs affect those drastically. So it's super important that everyone knows how to properly challenge charge-offs, because those are, according to the most recent FICO report, charge-offs were actually the second largest quantitative item that was on consumers' credit report that contained derogatory accounts, which was insane. It's insane. This is the first time that's ever happened in the history of since I've been doing it. But there are so many illegal charge-offs that are affecting our credit reports. So as long as they follow these steps, which is getting a copy of their official credit reports and just going through this list. I don't know if you guys want me to read through it, but just going through this list, looking for two specific things. And
Yeah. Let's go through, because some people might be listening to audio. They might not. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely do that. Okay. So, the statutes that everyone needs to be aware of and that they will use in order to properly challenge a charge off is called it's acronymed as TILA. Right. Now, this is the set of statutes that is the Truth in Lending Act. So it, as an overview, it deals heavily with the acquirement of a debt or how lenders are possessing a debt more so than like reporting on a credit report. So the process in which a lender's used matters the most. If lenders fail to do prerequisite things before charging off an account, things as simple as sending you a letter in writing, a warning, right? Like they legally have to do that. They have to send you a warning before they charge off an account. They have to give you a chance to bring the account current. They have to give you a chance to settle the account. And then they also, after these are three notices, by the way, and also after that, before they reported to the credit bureaus, they have to have tried to contact you at least 10 instances, right? And I'm just going to say 90% of companies do not ever follow that process to the T. And the burden of proof is on them. So I always tell, like, don't even try to stress yourself out. Like, did they send me? No. The burden of proof is on them. So what you do is you utilize your consumer rights that are rightly attributed to you, and you request that they provide proof that they have done all of those things. Providing proof is demanding that they send proof of ownership, right? One of the other biggest instances with charged off accounts is the original creditor selling the account to a collection agency, but not properly withdrawing ownership of that account. I want to say, according to 2 years ago, I think it was somewhere along the line of like 63% of charged off accounts that were in the hands of collection agencies, they didn't even own them properly. Like they did not legally own them. And although they was collecting on a debt, harassing citizens, they didn't even legally own them. All it would have took is as a consumer for us to demand what's called proof of ownership. And that account would have to legally get removed. Doesn't matter how much you owe, none of that matters. So the number one thing is demanding that they prove the ownership of the account, demanding that these instances did not happen, which is interest being added after the account was charged off. That is illegal. That happens a lot. Late fees being applied after the charge off. That also happens a lot because they'll add like attorney fees and things of that nature. They cannot do that. Incorrect balance calculation. So they're inflating it with interest and, like I said, different sort of fees happens a lot. Unclear breakdown. So like if they don't send you an itemized list of every single cent item on that account, they can't legally claim that you owe them that. Those are the main instances that a company would have to prove that is accurate. And like I said, over 70% of the times it's not. So use that information, use the statutes that's presented before you and challenge that by sending a letter to the credit bureaus saying exactly what I said.
The more you know.
All right.
Yes. Next tip.
Good to know. And that happens usually based off of like when does those type of situations even happen as far as.
So it usually takes about 6 months for an account to be charged off. So 6 months of failure to pay for an account. If you have a credit card that you have just let go of, have not made a payment within, you know, a few months, a company will usually charge it off at 6 months. However, they can charge off an account as soon as 90 days late, right? But most companies will wait until at least 6 months. So they do give you a while to you know, to make right on the account. However, even still, after they charge, because they didn't properly notify you and follow all of the steps that they are supposed to, a lot of them are not legal. And so, yes, that one is so important because the amount of charge-offs that I see get deleted and removed from credit reports on a weekly basis by a simple letter is outstanding. Like I will never get over it.
Yeah.
So one of the, another way that you can increase your credit score is by increasing your credit limits because that impacts like your credit utilization and it helps you to have the more credit you have available to you, then the higher your borrowing power is. And it just increases. It just improves your credit profile all around, right? So one of the tips that I always recommend and I love recommending is increasing your credit limits before applying for new credit. So that seems so simple, but the reason why somebody would somebody should do this is before they apply for a new credit card. So if you know that you are applying for a credit card, before you apply for that credit card, look at all of your existing credit cards and see if you qualify for a credit limit increase. That's simply because you have to understand that every single time you apply for a credit card, your lender who you are applying with, they will take a survey of all of your current credit card accounts, and whatever your average limit is or whatever, they will base your approved amount off of what you already have on your credit report, right? That's one. So you, if you only have credit cards under $1,500, it's very rare and unlikely that a new lender would trust you with $10,000 or $20,000, right? It is always best to seek to first increase your current credit limits before you apply for a new credit card. In fact, a huge red flag to lenders is if your credit limit is not increasing. That is a red flag to new lenders, and often a reason why they will deny you for their credit card, because that's risky. Why have you had that credit card since, for example, 2009, and the limit is still $500 or the limit is still $1,000, right? This is why I tell everyone, when you have a credit card, there should never be a full year that surpasses that you do not have or have not received at the very least one credit limit increase, but really you could have received two plus, at least two a year. That is a standard operation on credit cards. How banking credit limit increases work, that is so standard. Two is very minimal in the usual.
Ever wanted to explore the world of online trading but haven't dared try? The futures market is more active now than ever, and Plus 500 Futures is the perfect place to start. Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments, S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices, energy, metals, Forex, crypto, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade from anywhere right from your phone. Deposit with a minimum of $100 and experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for. See a trading opportunity? You will be able to trade it in just two clicks once your account is open. Not sure if you're ready? Not a problem. Plus 500 gives you an unlimited risk-free demo account with charts and analytic tools for you to practice on. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves the risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
You worked hard to lay the foundation for your contracting business. And when you're with Amex Business Platinum, you can keep building it up with a flexible spending limit that adapts with your business. And since you earned 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, you get even more from on-site overseeing. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Not all purchases will be approved. Terms apply. Learn more at AmericanExpress.com/AmexBusiness.